From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
Anything that I did, any impression that people had of me, good or bad, was never based on race. They either liked me or didn't like me for, you know, whatever I brought to the table there, and race was not a consideration. And that was an incredibly liberating feeling. But there was also this sense of responsibility at Ebony. You know, right. I first went to that building on a tour with my, I think, freshman class in 1973. And so you walk in the building, you are just taken aback by the fact that and this African-American, this iconic African-American businessman built this place. It was this, you know, temple of African-American journalism. And so I had been a student sort of touring that building, and then I went to work there, and I'm watching these other school children come through, and I'm sitting at my desk, and they're marveling at, you know, who are these people who work in this place? And that in itself was this incredible sense of responsibility and the duty that you felt to write about the Black experience from an authentic place and from a place of caring and again, responsibility for the community.
Charles Whitaker, the newly appointed dean of the Medill School of Journalism, Media, and Integrated Marketing Communications at Northwestern University. Whitaker served as interim dean for a year. Since 1993, he has been a member of the faculty at Medill. Whitaker teaches undergraduate and graduate courses in news writing, magazine editing, and blogging. He also teaches at Northwestern School of Professional Studies and the High School Journalism Institute. Prior to coming to academia, he served as a senior editor at Ebony Magazine, a news reporter at the Miami Herald, and as deputy feature editor, enterprise feature, and arts writer at the Louisville Times. For 9 years, he directed the Academy for Alternative Journalism, a summer fellowship program that trained young writers for work at the member publications of the Association for Alternative News Weeklies in an effort to address the field's lack of diversity. I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Charles Whitaker, Dean of the Medill School of Journalism, In Black America.
We no longer use, there are still schools that say they have students who are print magazine majors versus broadcast or something else. We don't even use those terms anymore.
Okay.
All journalism is digital now. There is no such thing as, I mean, and yes, some of it may appear in print,
right,
but an awful lot of it is in digital, and that is only increasingly going to be so. So I think, and when we talk about magazines, we don't talk about magazines as being ink on dead trees. Mm-hmm. We talk about magazines as being a style of journalism that is audience and niche specific, that uses techniques of fiction writing and not fiction, but fiction writing and storytelling. That's what we talk about when we talk about magazine, and that we don't talk about distribution mechanisms. We talk about, again, how the information is presented. So many of our students haven't thought broadly and deeply about journalism and the direction that it's going in.
For nearly a century, Northwestern University Medill School of Journalism has set the standard for journalism education. Medill leads the way in preparing the next generation of journalism leaders. Students that attend their undergraduate, graduate, and high school programs learn the skills necessary for the fast-changing world of journalism. This past summer, Charles Whitaker was named the new dean of Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. Whitaker has been a member of the faculty there since 1993. He also obtained his bachelor's and master's degrees there. Whitaker began his journalism career as a newspaper reporter at the Miami Herald. From there, he went on to the Louisville Times. He also spent time as a senior editor at Ebony Magazine before joining the Medill faculty. Recently, In Black America spoke with Whitaker from WNUR-FM.
Oh, man. I grew up on the south side of Chicago in what in some ways seemed like an idyllic time when I think about the south side of Chicago now. You know, neighborhood kids playing softball and football in the alleys and in the parks, went to public schools. a widowed father. My mother passed away when I was 11 years old. So my father raised three children by himself from the age of, he was near 50. I was 11. My sister was 7. My brother was 16. But, you know, a loving father, very supportive of all of our ambitions. And I knew from a very early age I wanted to write and be a journalist and sort of pursued that with singular focus from about eighth grade on.
Was Chicago South Side different from what it is today?
Yeah, absolutely. It felt, you know, in retrospect, it felt idyllic and almost suburban. As I said, you know, we played outside freely every day. The kids rode their bikes up and down the streets. Parents, everybody on the block was your parent, so you knew not to act up because so-and-so was going to tell your father or mother that they saw you doing something you weren't supposed to do. There was a real sense of community. It was a working class community. I grew up actually two blocks from Michelle Obama.
Okay.
She grew up, she and her brother were two blocks south of me. Again, it was not an upper-middle-class community. It was a working-class community. But still, there were teachers, preachers, undertakers, and a wide swath of the black community in my neighborhood.
Upon graduating from high school, you went to Northwestern University.
And I did.
Obviously, you have not left.
That is not entirely true.
Okay.
That is. There are people who believe that. But now I actually left immediately and went to work for the Miami Herald.
Right.
And I was there for almost 4 years and then went to the Louisville Times, which was the afternoon paper of the Courier Journal, owned by the Bingham family. Then I spent the bulk of my career, came back to Chicago to work with John Johnson at Ebony Magazine.
Yeah, right. Well, we're gonna get to that. What was it about Northwestern that attracted you to that iconic institution?
I had my sophomore English teacher, I told her that I was interested in journalism. Believe it or not, as a sophomore in high school, I had never even heard of Northwestern, even though it was just up the street in Evanston, you know, a mere 25 miles from my home, but I was not aware of the institution at all. But my sophomore English teacher, I told her I was interested in journalism, and she said, if you are interested in journalism, then you should be at Medill, because that is the best journalism school in the country. And I started looking into it, and I said, you know, she's right. I should go to Medill. That is the best journalism school in the country. And from that moment on, I actually was not interested in any other institution. I only applied to three schools coming out of high school, the University of Illinois, Clark, Atlanta University, and Northwestern. And I got into Northwestern, and that was it for me.
We're going to get into your deanship a little bit later on in the conversation, but what is it about Northwestern that puts it head and shoulders above other journalism schools?
Well, one thing that I think, what I tell people all the time is that we are blessed with the kind of school that attracts incredibly smart, industrious, and ambitious students, and our job is not to mess them up while they're here. So part of it is just luck of the draw. It's the fact that our students are so incredibly talented and would do well anywhere. But having said that, we think this is also an environment that provides for great experimentation and practice of the craft. I think I have some wonderful colleagues who, while being demanding, are also very supportive of the students and encourage them to be the best that they encourage and expect them to be the best that they can be. We are a professional school. We treat these bright young people like professionals and then turn them loose on the world.
Tell us about covering education. You had mentioned earlier about at the Miami Herald.
Yes. So I was a suburban education writer at first, covering a lot of high schools and elementary schools in North Dade. At that time, this is the early 1980s, Dade County was actually changing demographically. It was the Latino population when I first got there was largely Puerto Rican, and we were getting an influx and experiencing the greater influence of the Cuban population.
Mm-hmm.
We also had tremendous Haitian population there as well. So covering schools there was covering this very diverse, eclectic group of neighborhoods and schools and trying to cover and figure out how well Miami and the Miami Public School District, or the Dade County Public School District, was serving the needs of all of those students. And as you might imagine, it was not serving the needs of all of them particularly well.
All right. From there, you went to Louisville at the Louisville Times?
I did, yes. As an enterprise feature writer was the job. And that was a job, the afternoon paper, the Louisville Times, as I said, which was the afternoon paper of the Courier Journal, was considered the experimental paper. Mm-hmm. A woman named Judy Rosenfeld, whom the publishers and editors liked very much, was given the task of attracting a group of feature writers who would cover, the charge was to cover the changing nature of Louisville. And you brought these bright young feature writers, presumably talented, and they just turned us loose and said, cover Louisville, cover whatever interests you about Louisville. So we covered the everything from race relations to the implantation of the first artificial heart, which was happening in Louisville at that time as well. So it was an amazing job, and had the Binghams not, there was an internecine fight between the Bingham siblings, Barry and his sister, they sold the paper to Gannett. And it was pretty clear at that point that Gannett was going to fold the Times. And being one who I always consider myself good at reading the tea leaves, I started looking for a new job at that point. And then it just so happened that a good friend of mine with whom I'd worked at Ebony was leaving Ebony. Who I worked with at the Miami Herald. She went from Miami to Ebony. She was leaving Ebony, and she said, I'm leaving my job. You should talk to these folks about possibly coming to Ebony. And I did, and was fortunate enough to be hired there.
Did you know Lynn Lormant at Ebony?
Very well. Okay. I did and do know Lynn Lormant very well. We worked very closely with Lynn for the 10 years that I was there.
And I think one of her protégés, Marilyn Marshall.
Marilyn Marshall also.
A Houston defender now.
She is, exactly. I worked for, yep.
So tell us about that experience at Ebony. I did have a chance to go to the iconic building and
did you?
Had a chance to eat lunch in the marvelous lunch
room. The famous lunch room, yes, exactly.
So tell us about that experience at Ebony.
You know, Ebony, I tell people the thing about my Ebony experience that was most liberating for me was the fact that it is the only time in my professional life in which, even though, you know, I'm working at Ebony, I'm covering race and race relations, but it's the only time in which race never was a factor in my employment, in that, you know, as an African American, when you're working in other spaces, the specter of race always is in either in the background or the foreground, right? It is always there, even if it is unspoken. At Ebony, there was something quite liberating knowing that anything that I did, any impression that people had of me, good or bad, was never based on race. They either liked me or didn't like me for, you know, whatever I brought to the table there. And race was not a consideration. And that was an incredibly liberating feeling. But there was also this sense of responsibility at Ebony. You know, I first went to that building on a tour with my, I think, freshman class in 1973. And so you walk in the building, you are just taken aback by the fact that and this iconic African-American businessman built this place. It was this, you know, temple of African-American journalism. And so I had been a student sort of touring that building, and then I went to work there, and I'm watching these other school children come through, and I'm sitting at my desk, and they're marveling at, you know, who are these people who work in this place? And that in itself was this incredible sense of responsibility, and the duty that you felt to write about the Black experience from an authentic place and from a place of caring and again responsibility for the community writ large.
And you do get a sense of awe when you see those life-size Ebony magazine covers on the wall walk in the building.
Absolutely.
This is In Black America. We'll be back with more of our conversation in a moment. If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr. and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio. We're speaking with Charles Whitaker, Dean and Professor at the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. Charles, you're also the co-editor of Magazine Writing. What are some of the things you learned co-editing that particular textbook?
Well, actually, you know, what we did, my co-author and I, who was a colleague at Ebony Magazine with me and is now a colleague here at Northwestern, Christopher Benson, what we tried to do was codify what we know about the art of feature writing / magazine writing, while also talking about, at the time that we wrote it, how the industry was changing and is responding to the disruption of the digital age. And so it was really trying to provide unmasking, if you will, for students and young people what a feature is, mm-hmm. what various kinds of features are, and how they can go about assembling facts into a compelling magazine article. And that is more craft and art than science, but some people find it mystifying, and we wanted to demystify that process for them.
As the new dean, what are some of the challenges you all face with this new group of young journalists?
You know, I would say, again, I'm fortunate to work with such incredibly talented young people, but they are young people who have grown up with an odd media consumption diet. They, by and large, have not grown up reading printed material. They Right. have grown up reading largely online and largely on their phones. Mm-hmm. And there's something about the consumption of material in digital that makes it difficult sometimes. We talk about demystifying what a feature story is. It makes it difficult for them to kind of see the nuance of the construction of stories. We talk about the difference between reading digitally and reading in print as the difference between a lean back and a lean forward experience. And in print, when you're leaning back, you're sort of taking this information in, you're kind of recognizing the structure of the story more. You're reading both for information, but in some instances for pleasure. When you're reading on your phone, it's a hurried, lean forward experience. Right. You're not reading, you're not paying as much attention to the nuances of structure and mm-hmm. even the nuances of language use. And so with a generation that has grown up largely reading in that lean forward posture, when we sit down and talk to them about story structure, about syntax, about lots of the nuances of writing, I find these days it is more foreign to them than it was to students of a different generation. And they often, with a different generation, you could sort of speak in shorthand about those things, and students recognized what you were saying right away. They recognize the shorthand. We have to take a deeper dive and work harder at deconstructing it now for students so that they recognize that. On the other hand, as digital natives, mm-hmm. they're much more fluent with alternative storytelling techniques, which right. is what digital is about. And so we learn a lot from them about how we should think differently about presenting information in a digital format.
I can remember in the classroom back in the 80s and early 90s, most of the students wanted to do entertainment journalism. Everybody wanted to do Access Hollywood or E-Entertainment. Has that mindset changed?
There certainly are. We still have a lot of students who want to do that. But in our graduate program, the most popular, our graduate program is divided into specializations, so students get to specialize in a topic. Mm-hmm. The most popular specialization in our graduate program is social justice. We have an awful lot of students who now see journalism as a mechanism for change and for advocacy, which is really interesting because, you know, as I was coming up in journalism school, you could never say that you wanted your as a journalist, you were an advocate. You were always the honest broker, the detached observer. Mm-hmm. You had no dog in the hunt. You had no opinion. And these students think very differently about the role of journalism. They think it should be a mechanism for change. And so I actually find more and more students who want to do that as opposed. We saw a number of students who want to do entertainment and fashion and sports. Sports is incredibly popular. And I do not denigrate students for having those passions as well. We think that those can be gateways for students to come into journalism school and find their way to other kinds of journalism. But if that's what they want to do, we're perfectly fine with that. But I also see an awful lot of students, particularly because of the current political environment, mm-hmm. who see journalism as their vehicle, a way in which they can bring to light issues that they are passionate about and also advocate for change.
The students that are applying and coming to Northwestern, are or have they been a part of journalism on that high school newspaper or yearbook, or they're coming to you with a clean slate?
It's a mixed bag. We have always attracted a lot of editors in chief of their newspapers, of their high school newspapers and their high school yearbooks. Mm-hmm. So we do get a fair number of those students as well. I am also interested, particularly because so many urban high schools do not have journalism programs.
Right.
I'm also interested in attracting students who may not, who may think they mm-hmm. want to do journalism but haven't had a chance to experience that. So I don't want to foreclose this experience and this opportunity for students who simply have not had the opportunity to do a lot of journalism in high school. But yes, we do get a lot of students who have done, who have, you know, even appeared in their local newspapers in addition to doing high school journalism.
When you get a chance to talk to young people, are you advising them on two particular career paths? One is electronic journalism and the other is paper magazine. And can you mix the two, since most newspapers are now requiring reporters to have some type of knowledge in the digital age?
So we no longer use, there are still schools that say they have students who are print magazine majors versus mm-hmm. broadcast versus broadcast or something else. We don't even use those terms anymore.
Okay.
All journalism is digital now. There is no such thing as, I mean, mm-hmm. and yes, some of it may appear in print,
right.
but an awful lot of it is in digital, and that is only increasingly going to be so. So I think, and when we talk about magazines, we don't talk about magazines as being ink on dead trees. Mm-hmm. We talk about mm-hmm. magazines as being a style of journalism that is audience and niche specific, that uses techniques of fiction writing and not fiction, but fiction writing mm-hmm. and storytelling. That's what we talk about when we talk about magazine, and that we don't talk about distribution mechanisms. We talk about, again, how the information is presented. So many of our students who haven't thought broadly and deeply about journalism and the direction that it's going in may come in thinking that, oh, I want to be in magazines, and they think that means print, but we try to quickly disabuse them of that notion and say that's not what magazine journalism is exclusively, though it may indeed be presented in print, nor is that what journalism is. Journalism is, you know, the collection of information, the dissemination of information, and it takes all sorts of forms. And so we're more interested in talking about how to collect that information effectively, efficiently, accurately, and then we're training them in the various mechanisms for distributing it.
Speaking of forms, are there instruments on campus where students have an opportunity to actually practice that craft?
Yeah, we've got really vibrant student media here. I say, I talked about how enterprising and entrepreneurial our students are. I say at the drop of a hat, mm-hmm. there is a student starting a new publication somewhere on campus. And they're always coming to me for funding for it. And I'm like, you know, I can't fund, you know, 80 student publications. You guys are going to have to be entrepreneurial and kind of figure out the funding for yourselves. We try to give them seed money and support them when we can. But yes, there are lots and lots of opportunities for students to publish. And the great thing about digital is that really all you need is a WordPress site, right? There are not as many barriers to entry and to creating a digital publication as there are with print. You don't have those printing costs.
As dean, do you stay ahead of the curve?
It's tough. But one of the great things about being in a school is that you can experiment with a lot, right? So we have the luxury, since we don't have to make money on the publication, we can do a lot of experimenting with form. And then we just bring people in. We try to stay. We are a faculty that is probably 60% practitioners, 40% classic academics, and the practitioners, and even the academics to a certain extent, or scholars, as they say, do a pretty good job of trying to stay connected to the industries from which we come, so that we are, no one stays ahead of the curve because things are moving so quickly, but so that we can at least ride the waves that are aware of the rapid changes that are taking place in all of the industries that we're training people for. And we're both a journalism school and a marketing and communication school as well. Right. Both industries have been buffeted by digital disruption, and we're trying to stay on top of the changes in both sides.
And speaking with one of my former colleagues, the late Lorraine Branham, she had mentioned that it's difficult to convince people of color who are part of the industry to go back and obtain the degrees that are necessary for them to go back to the classroom. Are you finding that same sentiment?
You know, I it's not so much that it's, what's difficult about it is the cost. I mean, the cost is the barrier. You know, Northwestern is a very expensive private school. So we do have, we have people all the time asking us to create part-time programs, to create online programs. And we're looking at ways in which we can be of service to the industry and people who need retraining. The industry is not all that forgiving in terms of giving people time to go back and retrain or providing any funding sources for that. So we're trying to think about ways in which we can be more of service to who want us to keep abreast of the digital changes.
I had mentioned Lorraine, and is there a large cadre of African Americans or people of color that are deans of journalism schools?
There are not. You knew the answer to that. That was a rhetorical question. Let's see. You know, at historically white or major white institutions, there are there are two of us. There, of course, are deans at the HBCUs.
Right, exactly.
So the HBCUs, I have counterparts at the HBCUs, but no, at the major white institutions, no, there are not many of us. And I am the first African-American dean of Medill, but also the first Medill alumnus to be dean as well.
What led you to... Obviously, you did the interim and then accepting the full deanship.
Yeah. What did lead me to do that? You think I might know better. No, I care deeply about the institution. The institution means a lot to me. As you said, many people think I've never left, even though I did spend time away. The bulk of my resume is filled with my time at Northwestern and Medill.
Charles Whitaker, Dean of the Medill School of Journalism, Media, and Integrated Marketing Communications at Northwestern University. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm John L. Hansen, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.